Hi, everyone. My name is Muthu. I am an engineer from Facebook, and I'm here to talk to you about Accio. A lot of you Harry Potter fans out there probably recognize Accio as the summoning charm in Harry Potter used to move objects from afar. Now, we use Accio at Facebook for similar purposes, except that we use it on data. So we'll start with some quick motivation. Now, there are a lot of application services at Facebook that store user data and that need fast access to this data so that they can provide a really good user experience. Examples of such services include a variety of newsfeed services that basically help with the rendering of a user's newsfeed. Now, when we had just a couple of data centers, it was perfectly fine for these application services to put a copy of their entire data set in each of the data centers, right? But as Facebook grew both in terms of number of users as well as feature richness, we needed to scale our hardware resources. And a natural consequence of this was that Facebook started deploying its hardware footprint across continents. And then, of course, once we had a large number of data centers, it was clearly not feasible for these application services to put a copy of their data set in each data center. Right? Not only would we be wasting an enormous amount of storage resources, but we would also be eating up precious WAN bandwidth for replication purposes. Now, this is where Accio stepped in. Accio stepped in to study data access patterns, exploit locality, and to cut down the replication factor of the data without a noticeable drop in latencies. So that's the key. It did all of this without a noticeable drop in access latencies. Now, note that it's easy to brush this off as a not so common problem that only a few large companies like Facebook have, but in reality, it's a much, much more widespread problem because every app developer that has their app deployed across continents is going to face this problem because cloud service providers like Azure and AWS bring tens of data centers to your fingertips. Now, before I dive into a couple of concrete examples, around how Accio basically helps save resources, I wanted to take a minute to define some terminology, specifically that of a microshard. We define a microshard, for us, a microshard is basically a unit of data management as well as consistency. A microshard is defined for us as a small unit of logical data that's self-contained, so there are no references across microshards. A microshard has access locality, and in a typical data set, you'll find billions and trillions of microshards, right? And exactly what a microshard represents is basically completely up to the application service. So imagine a messaging application service. In that context, a microshard could represent a messaging thread. In the context of a newsfeed service, a microshard could represent some sort of per-user context, read and read marks, for example. Also note that, so just to recap, a microshard is a small unit of logical data that's self-contained and that has access locality, right? And also note that not everything can be broken down into microshards. A great example is Facebook's social graph, right? So imagine person P who goes and makes a post on their timeline. Now, this post is going to be fetched by all of P's friends from all over the world, right? So there goes your locality. Also, P's friends are going to be able to react to that post. They're going to be able to comment on it. They're going to be able to like it. So that means that there's going to be strong interconnections across the data, right? So Facebook's social graph is a great example of a data that cannot be broken down into microshards. And an initial limitation, and a limitation of the initial implementation of Accio is that it only works for data sets that can be split into such microshards. So let's take a concrete example of how Accio helps save space. Now, every colored square that you see on your screen there is a microshard of data. Typically, you'll have billions and trillions of these, but for simplicity purposes, we only show three. R1 through R6 are basically six different regions or data centers. And what you see on your screen over there is that there is a copy of every microshard in each data center. This was a world before Accio when application services needed fast access to the data. However, with Accio, again, we were able to study data access patterns, apply exploit locality, and cut down on the number of copies, cut down on the replication factor, and spread the data around such that it covered all the data centers that the data is being accessed from. Now, the exact number of copies that we stored was a function of the amount of fault tolerance that was necessary. So you see we store three copies here. That's purely from a fault tolerance perspective. So we saw how Accio helped save storage resources. In this example, we'll see how Accio helped save WAN bandwidth. Now, there are a lot of services at Facebook that don't care about latencies. Right? So they're at the other end of the spectrum to the initial set of services that we looked at. And these services need a certain number of copies from a fault tolerance perspective. So three in this example, again, you only see one microshard for simplicity purposes. These services just used to pick a static set of data centers and spread their data across these data centers, despite the data actually being accessed from all of the data centers. So what this basically means is that we're paying for cross data center calls at access time. So this is expensive WAN bandwidth. Now, even for these services, by studying the data access patterns and by localizing all of the accesses to the data, Accio was able to help save WAN bandwidth. Now, a key thing to note here is that Accio rehomes the data, right? In other words, it basically moves the source of truth, or it moves the writes as well along with the reads. As a result of doing this, right, and this is in contrast to typical caches, which basically just place a read copy of the data near you. Now, as a result of rehoming the data, we're able to, for a very cheap price, for a very cheap cost, we're able to expose the underlying consistency that the data store provides. Whereas when you add something on caching, caching on top, exposing something like strong consistency becomes a very expensive affair. Now, another kind of advantage that we get from rehoming the data is that we're able to better serve workloads with low read-write ratios. Also, another subtle difference to note with Accio is that because it provides this container called a microshard, application service owners can group together logically related data so that upon the first miss to a microshard, we can prefetch the entire microshard. Right? So this, again, is a little bit different from caching strategies. You could prefetch with caching strategies, but you would need some sort of custom application service logic that's running to group the data together. Accio has been built to be flexible. It's currently integrated with five different storage systems at Facebook, all the way from MySQL to Cassandra to a homegrown key value store that we call ZippyDB. And one of the key features of Accio is that it's able to generically implement something like locality across a wide variety of stores. And the other thing to note is that Accio is also extremely scalable. So we serve hundreds of millions of data requests per second. Now, at a place like Facebook, where we deal with exabytes of data and terabytes per second of cross data center traffic, Accio is an extremely critical part to our infrastructure. So we'll move on and take a look at how all of this happens. Now, because Accio makes optimal data placement decisions, when a client basically receives a request to act on a particular microshard, Accio client basically needs to know exactly where to find that data so that it can appropriately route the access requests. And for this, we use the metadata database. The metadata database is basically a map from microshard to placement information. The Accio client basically does a lookup on the metadata database, and then it forwards the access to the appropriate location. Now, a typical footprint of the metadata database is around 300 gigs of data for a service with tens of billions of microshards. So we're talking about an extremely compact footprint here. And a cache in front of the metadata database basically helps absorb most of the reads that go into the backend to the lookup tier. And stale lookups that are routed to the wrong server are mitigated using a variety of strategies that we talk about in the paper, all the way, an example of a strategy that we use is basically fine-grained per microshard access control lists, where you can find a little bit more information about all of that in the paper. I won't go into details here. Now, Accu also needs to understand how microshards have been accessed in the recent past, as well as currently. And for this, we use the access database. The access database is fundamentally a time-windowed counter service. There is a time-windowed counter for every microshard data center tuple. And we bump up this counter every time the microshard is accessed from a given data center. Now, the typical footprint for this is around 300 gigabytes of data, and we store 10 days worth of access information, but we only ever access 3 days so that we get a much better picture of the recent past. Now, again, going back to the footprint, it's a very compact footprint, but again, we don't need to enable this for every single Accu-enabled service. We can, if we are able to categorize a broad category of services, then we can pick a representative from that set and track access patterns just for that service, and the rest of the services in that category can basically take advantage of that. The other thing to note is that the routing layer is a complete black box as far as Accu is concerned, which brings about some interesting properties, basically. Because it's a complete black box, the routing layer is free to make its own load balancing decisions, and it provides a much more loosely coupled stack. So let's take an example. On the y-axis, what you see is the percentage of requests coming from a specific region R that are being served by the different data centers. So each curve is associated with a given data center, and the sum of all curves is, of course, equal to 100%. Now, region R happens to have a Facebook data center nearby it, and that's actually pretty easy to see from the graph. So the top curve that you see over there is the data center that's right by R. And what you see is off-peak, this data center is able to, it has sufficient capacity to basically serve all the requests coming from R. Whereas off-peak, it doesn't have all the capacity needed to serve all requests. So the routing layer is forced to basically load balance the load across a number of data centers. Now, given that Accu considers the routing layer as a black box, it's able to understand and react to such patterns as well. The data placement service, or DPS, as you see on your screen over here, is basically the brain of Accu. It's the one that decides when to place data, as well as when to move currently placed data because of suboptimality. Now, the data placement service knows the list of supported placements. And for each placement, it knows the set of supported data centers. For example, for our homegrown key-value store, ZipDB, we support 35 different replication topologies or placements. And it's within the set of supported placements that Accu makes placement decisions. The data placement service receives hints from the Accu client on suboptimally placed microshards. Right? The reason the Accu client knows about this is because we just saw that the Accu client on every access to the microshard does a lookup of the microshard to placement information. And when it does this lookup, it knows if the current access is going to go cross data center or not. And if it's going to go across data center, then it flags it as a suboptimal access and notifies the data placement service asynchronously. Now, when the data placement service receives such a hint, it basically runs a set of service-specific policies that include things like, hey, have we exceeded the limit for the number of migrations that we can do for this application service in the last minute? Has this microshard been ping-ponging back and forth, exhibiting some bad behavior? It runs a bunch of these policies, and then it, in order to determine eligibility for migration. But once the eligibility is confirmed, it then fetches the access information for this microshard from the Accu access database so that it can understand how this data has been accessed from the different data centers. All of this information, along with per data center scores, are basically fed into a configurable scoring policy. Now, note that we support a variety of different scoring policies because how you would score a large messaging thread with a large number of users is very different from how you would score a per-user context that's only ever accessed by the user, right? So for that reason, we have a variety of different scoring policies that we support. But just to give you a feel for what a scoring policy looks like, here is our very simple default scoring policy. The first thing that we do is we eliminate any placements with data centers that contain hot data centers. This is so that we don't aggravate hot data centers and push more load to them, right? So for the remaining data centers, we generate a per data center score, which is just simply the number of times a microshard has been accessed from that data center in the last n days, where n is a configurable number. And then once we finish generating the per data center score, we then generate a per placement score, which is simply just a sum of all the individual data center scores for the set of data centers associated with the placement. And then we just pick the placement with the highest score. If they're tied, then we basically break these ties with resource usage information so as to balance load across different placements. Now, there could be multiple instances of the data placement service running at the same time. And so in order to ensure that we don't have more than one data placement service acting on a particular microshard, we basically grab a per microshard lock before acting on a given microshard. Again, note that this is not a global lock. It's a per microshard lock that's stored in the metadata database to serialize migrations on a particular microshard. And a work item is atomically created and deleted with this lock, and the purpose of the work item is to track any work before it started, so that if a data placement service instance on a particular host were to fail and if it were to be resurrected on a different host, then it can query for the set of pending work and run them to completion. And we use monotonically increasing epochs to ensure that stale data placement service instances that are network partitioned don't negatively impact a more current version of the instance that's come up elsewhere. So we use a variety of migration strategies. Again, a lot of this is dependent on what exactly the set of features that the underlying data store supports. Because of shortness of time, I won't go into too much details, but you know, we take advantage of features like native timestamps, fine-grained access control lists, and read-modify-write transactions where they exist. So initially, I wanted to walk you guys through a simple migration strategy, but we'll skip this because of shortness of time. You can find all of this in the paper. And of course, once migration completes, all accesses to the data basically go to the new database. In this case, we moved from the West Coast database to the East Coast database. So we presented a lot of pretty graphs and many different data points in the paper. I'll just present one such data point. So we integrated with a variety of newsfeed services atop our homegrown key value store called ZippyDB. And we saw some pretty massive wins, up to 40% in storage capacity, 75% in WAN bandwidth, and 68% in P95 latencies. Just quickly shifting gears, talking about the future. Again, I wanted to spend a little bit more time, but we're running really short. What we talked about right now is basically moving data close to compute because we weren't able to move the compute portion itself. But wherever possible, it's actually much cheaper to move compute close to data rather than vice versa. And the benefits of doing so are exactly the same. So far, we've been talking about the locality aspect of data placement, but there are many other dimensions to it. Another dimension is data temperature. This is something that we're extremely excited about. A lot of large data sets at Facebook that have distinct hot and cold portions of the data with different SLAs. What we want to do is basically, today what happens is those data sets basically get stored in the same setup that's optimized for the hot SLA. What we are proposing is a strong data lifecycle solution where we allow the data from going from being hot to warm to cold. So this is something that we're working on right now. If there's only one thing that you can take away from the paper and from this talk, I want it to be this, which is that locality at fine granularity works. Right, so you saw the really compact footprint of the metadata database, the very compact footprint of the access database, And we've shown that in the paper we have more data points, but we've shown that for production services, the overhead is very minimal and savings are massive. Thank you. You can come see us on poster booth number 9 if you want to come say hi. We'd love to talk to all of you.
Questions?
Hi, my name is Sharad Agarwal from Microsoft. Muthu, thank you for the presentation. I really enjoyed this problem space. It's a lot of fun. So I'm wondering, for the sets of applications that you ran this on, how often does locality change? Like, could you get away with doing periodic partitioning, and how periodic would it have to be?
So the main problem with doing you're talking about, like, you know, looking at access logs, partition logs offline, and then analyzing the data access patterns, and then
or maybe sort of semi-online, semi-offline. I'm trying to understand, you know, the trade-off between optimality and moving data around too frequently.
Yeah. So you would think that, you know, locality is purely controlled by a user moving around from one data center to another, like if they fly from the west coast of the U.S. to the east coast of the U.S., right? And so it being a very rare event. But in reality, what you would notice is the other graph that I'd shown you around kind of load balancing traffic across multiple data centers, what ends up happening is things like that end up affecting locality much more than actual user movements. And so this, like that load balancing that I showed you, happens on a daily basis across a wide set of data centers. And if we don't react like almost in real time, we notice that it actually affects user engagement. Right, so for a lot of the newsfeed services where, you know, which affect like the rendering of a user's newsfeed, we start migrating the data in like a matter of milliseconds.
Okay, a related question to that is, how do you think about provisioning for the peak at every data center versus, and the cost associated with that, versus not provisioning for that peak and instead moving data around and the cost of the WAN cost of moving that data around?
Yeah, that's a good question. So one of the things, one of the difficulties we called out with Accio in the paper is to basically, is capacity provisioning, right? Before what used to happen is we used to build data centers where, you know, it was suitable to have data centers and like, you know, they were strategically located. But now we have to take into consideration things like a locality and where exactly user growth is going to happen in terms of provisioning capacity. Capacity provisioning does become a challenging problem, but what we end up doing is because of the decoupled nature of the routing layer from Accio, we allow the routing layer to basically, as much as possible, send as many requests to the nearby data centers, but where not possible, just kind of load balance it across nearby data centers. And in our access tracking mechanisms, we actually account for all of this. Because what would end up happening is if you're on the West Coast, you would hit the West Coast data center, and it's possible occasionally on peak you hit some other data center that's nearby. Our counters would capture this and would put, if we needed 3 copies of your data, would put 2 copies in each of these data centers and would put a 3rd copy elsewhere. So that's how we kind of work around it. In reality, it's not been too much of an issue, but we know eventually as we grow to a much, much larger number of data centers, this is something we'll need to keep an eye on.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Muthu.
Thank you.